Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
After the apocalypse, a pandemic survival story, season 4, episode 18, Turn. It was dark, and Brent was feeling his age. These 5 a.m. morning runs weren't as easy as they used to be, but it was his habit, and he cherished it despite the discomfort. Every morning since boot camp, he'd roll out of his rack and put in his 5 miles, part of his routine, like brushing his teeth. It set him up for a successful day. Win the morning and win the day, is what the drill sergeant said as the recruits moaned in their sleep deprivation. Brent had embraced the discipline. Whatever happened in a day, if he got his morning run in, it was a good day out of the gate. Everything else was gravy. But lately, it had taken a solid 10 minutes for him to warm up, for his heart to settle, for the little aches and niggles to go away. In those 10 minutes, it was a thankless mechanical act. But eventually, he would feel the warm, comforting glow of his body at work in the morning darkness, and it would be worth it. He would win the day. Catching the plague hadn't helped. There had been those few weeks when he was tied to a sick bed with the virus, when he thought he was going to die. Of course, he couldn't run at all. When finally he discovered he was going to survive, he'd slowly started his morning runs again. He started that first week just walking. Then he threw in some jogging with the walks, and eventually he was back to his old schedule. But it didn't feel the same as before. It might have been damage from the virus, or maybe he was just getting old. But it wasn't as easy as it had been. It felt like work. He felt old. The familiar route he was on this morning led around the periphery of the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, ORNL, complex. He was glad to get out early on these summer days before the heat came. Here, at the fringe of the new dawn, it was still cool enough for comfort. Sunrise was until after 7 o'clock a.m. in this part of Tennessee in August, but the air was already pregnant with the warmth and humidity to come. He ran down the deserted Bethel Valley Road and then out Spallation Drive towards and into the guest houses by the conference center. It was green and lush with the weeds creeping into the roads. No one was mowing the grass or trimming the bushes, and it was slowly being reclaimed by nature. A pair of foraging rabbits froze in the knee-high grass mid-chew and watched him go by, their large, glassy brown eyes reflecting pre-sunrise glow, as he turned into the parking lot on his way to circling the guest houses, he saw that there were new vehicles in the parking area. New guests? One vehicle was a standard black military SUV with government plates. An emissary from another bunker, perhaps? He was slightly surprised that there were also some fighting vehicles. He recognized two high-mobility, multi-purpose wheeled vehicles, abbreviated HMMWV, but the military grunts had adopted the now familiar Humvee name. He'd seen a fair number of Humvees. That part wasn't surprising. In a logical way, they were the vehicle of choice in the apocalypse. What surprised him, what was different about these, is that they had their armament. It looked like an M2 50 caliber machine gun augmented by Mark 19 automatic grenade launchers. That's some aggressive firepower if they were trained to maintain and use them. Jesus, those things could do some damage, Brent thought, especially if they fell into the wrong hands. Brent didn't stop for closer inspection, but his mind was like a rock tumbler rolling sharp questions around that he needed to find answers to. Who were these newcomers, and why were they here? Was there a reason, besides the current state of the world, they brought this firepower? Was this who the general was talking to, and what exactly were their plans? He felt a bit of fear trickle down the back of his neck like the trailing of spider silk. Why wasn't he being kept in the loop? What the hell was going on? He suddenly realized he was running too fast now. His stressful line of thought had goosed his pace, breath ragged, heart pushing, sweat dripping. He had forgotten the aches and pains of old age and been swept up in his emotions and adrenaline. Something was going on. What was the general up to? And why? He needed to find out. Brent eased into the last stretch of his run back to his quarters and tried to relax. It was on Main Street of the ORNL, the well-named Central Valley Road that ran through the middle of the complex. He saw the general walking down the sidewalk away from him on the other side of the road, on the way to his office, no doubt. Brent's intelligence training kicked in, and he decided to put this happenstance crossing of paths to good use.
"General, sir. Good morning, sir,"
he said loudly, and it bounced off the buildings in the pre-dawn morning glow. The general did not flinch. He calmly looked at Brent.
"Good morning, Captain. Out for your morning constitutional, I see." "Yes, sir. Fit mind, fit body, sir."
"Indeed." Brent stopped, wiped his face with his shirt, and fell into step with the general's long, straight-backed stride.
"I see we have new visitors, General?"
Brent asked. The general looked at Brent as if trying to divine his motives and replied cautiously,
"Yes, a fire team from the command bunker."
"The command bunker, sir?"
"Yes, I was meaning to brief you today. But I suppose now is as good a time as any,"
the general explained.
We've made contact with the national leadership. Undersecretary of Homeland Security George Stensland survived, and according to the chain of command, he is now the leader of the provisional government.
Brent took a minute to absorb this new information.
There was a new leader and a provisional government? Forgive me, sir, but that's quite a development.
Brent replied, wondering what this meant.
When did this happen, sir? It's been a couple of weeks. I would have shared earlier, but I needed to confirm everything. How does this impact our mission, sir? If anything, it accelerates our need to reestablish the government. He intends to get the government up and running, thank God, and follow the continuance of government protocols.
Brent chewed on this information, wondering how the visiting fire team played into the COG plan. He decided to push a bit.
Yes, sir. What does that mean for us and our mission in practical terms?
The general didn't respond right away.
We will follow the COG playbook. In practice, that means martial law, federalizing of industry and resources, and the appointment of executives to run things until the nation gets back on its feet. Martial law, sir?
The general paused and said,
yes, until we can reestablish the mechanics of a working civil government, we'll need executive control. It's a necessary transition phase.
Brent asked,
it's still very disorganized and chaotic out there. How are we going to implement martial law?
The general smiled.
It's not going to be easy, son. Saving the nation is never easy. That's why I asked for help from Undersecretary Stensland. He loaned us that fire team and their equipment. Those men are here to help with enforcement.
Later that day, Janet found herself knocking on the door of the general's office. She needed his approval for additional information access and wanted to give him an update on her progress.
Come in, Janet,
the voice of the general offered from within. Janet stepped forward into the office, but stopped short when she realized the general was not alone. A soldier in a green and brown camouflage uniform stood to one side and eyed her approach. He had his sleeves rolled up, and a skull tattoo on his exposed forearm said, "Lead the way." The soldier had a sidearm in a holster and cradled a rifle comfortably, like he had been born with it.
"Excuse me," she said. "I can come back later. We're not busy." "Nonsense, my dear,"
the general smiled.
"What can I do for you?" "Well, I'd like access to any other legal documents we have. And I'd like a copy of the emergency protocols. I think you call them the COG? "Yes, we'll see what we can do,"
the general replied noncommittally.
"Are you making good progress, then?" "Yes, I've got some ideas. First, I think we should reestablish traveling circuit courts to hear cases while things are unsettled. Most of these towns have a court building we could use. We just need some judges. Bring the law to the people. Let them know there still is law."
Janet continued with her thoughts.
"I also think we can use most of the current law code. But we do have a chance to modernize some of the founding documents. We could even have a constitutional convention,"
she concluded with enthusiasm. The general responded,
"The traveling court sounds like it could work, a bit like the Old West. They could be military tribunals, but I don't think we need to meddle with the rest. What we have is perfectly fine. If anything, we might strip off some of the unnecessary laws.
Janet was taken aback by this last comment and struggled to find her footing in the conversation. It didn't help that the armed guard was smiling at her.
But, General, that's why there are amendments, because the founders knew things would change over time.
Well, dear, it doesn't matter anyhow. It's martial law now, for the foreseeable future, until we get government back up. Then we can come back to these niceties.
What?
Janet stammered incredulously.
Martial law?
Yes, we've been told by leadership in D.C. to intervene, to prevent further chaos, until things settle down a bit.
But why? How? You can't just declare yourself in charge.
She said,
yes, we can, and we intend to. It's all laid out in the COG plans. As terrible as this plague was, our government had the foresight to provide us with a plan for it, and that's what we're going to do.
He smiled at her.
Being a lawyer, I'm sure you understand.
She recognized this as a dismissal. Her mind was churning. Why have her do this work? Why let her think she had the aegis for change and improvement if they were just going to step in and take over? Had something changed? She felt used and diminished. She had found a hook to hang her purpose on, and now it was apparently all a sop to her ego. Was this some sort of ruse to keep her busy, to get her out of the way? Janet clenched her jaw, nodded silently, turned and left the office. This wasn't the end of it. And this wasn't the first patronizing old man to try to blunt her ambition. She would not go gentle into the good night. She realized now that he had no intention of supporting her efforts. Shortly after that realization, she had another. She needed to get out of here. Just then, as Janet was striding down the hall, contemplating her next move, the old man appeared rushing in the other direction. Bill the dog jogged by his side. The old man was pulling a cooler behind him, strapped to a wheelie, like carry-on luggage in an airport.
"Hey, lady," he said excitedly. "Is the general in?"
"Yes, I've just come from there."
The old man looked her up and down quizzically.
"Something wrong?"
I don't know. He's got an armed guard, and he's talking about martial law."
"So, it is the apocalypse. He's just doing his job."
"Maybe I'm overreacting, but he was very dismissive just now. Like the work I'm doing doesn't matter."
"Well, everybody is doing the best they can. Don't read too much into it."
The old man continued with urgency.
"Besides, I found the baby, and I have a lead that I need his help to chase down. Come on, let's go."
Janet shrugged. She turned to follow the old man and the dog back to the general's office.
"General," the old man barged in and began right away. "I've brought samples with me that I need to process. I need access to your lab and any data on the virus you have."
The general leaned back and glanced at his guard. Bill, the dog, trotted around the desk and began to sniff at Maisie on her pillow, who in turn began to growl and bark. The general grimaced.
"Corporal, take Maisie out to the lawn, please."
He tossed the leash to the soldier, who clipped it to Maisie's collar and let her out, barking and fussing at Bill, who followed them with great interest. The general grimaced at this. The old man acted as if none of it had happened and remained singularly focused on his ask.
"General, this is time-sensitive. I need to get these samples into the lab."
"Calm down, doctor," the general snapped. "Why all this commotion? What are you talking about?"
The old man was impatient, but realized he needed to help the general catch up. He told of the baby and his examinations, how he was conceived after the apocalypse and showed no symptoms of the virus. But she had the virus in her. He wrapped it up by reinforcing his need to test for immune response to see if she was resistant or the virus just hadn't been triggered yet.
"What does all this mean? In layman's terms, please, doctor,"
the general said, sounding a bit exasperated.
"It means I'm one step closer to finding what caused this thing to turn on everywhere, all at once, at the same time. I think it's got some sort of DNA trigger, and if I can find that, I can beat it."
"What are you saying?"
the general asked, now seeming interested.
"That the virus was programmed to go off at a certain time?"
The old man paused for a second and thought about the general's question. The realization hit him like a ton of bricks. If the old man's theory was correct, then yes, the virus was encoded to manifest at a specific time. But how did it get that way? He had assumed it had evolved its capability through natural mutation and adaptation like plagues of the past. But this virus could very well have been designed to do this. Why hadn't he thought of this before? He felt a wave of cold sweat. Designed by whom? This thing could be man-made. The old man's mouth hung open in the realization and shock of it. Who would do such a thing?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome back, my survivor friends. Here we are, season 4, episode 18, The End is Near. Season 4 is crawling like a broken and dirty zombie back to its grave. No, you don't like that metaphor? How about season 4 is prancing like a hopped-up hellhound into the setting sun? Some of my closest friends are metaphors. You may have noticed from the sound of my voice that I have either recovered from the virus I had last week, or I have expelled the evil demons from my lungs, depending on your worldview. Hey, with Season 4 coming to its fitful and petulant demise at the end of April, I need you, yes you, to mail me some stories to read into audio over the break. I've had a few responses, and that's quite disappointing, because I know you're all creative people. Get those stories in. Otherwise, I will be forced to just recite Vogon poetry. What new things have I consumed for you this week? Well, I kind of feel like I'm running out of apocalyptic movies to watch. I've been scraping the bottom of the barrel this week. I watched one called The Directive from 2019, which was fascinatingly awful. It was like some kids stole a camera and made a movie. But the one interesting part of the storyline was that the directive in the title refers to a mission to reduce the human population by 99%. So yeah, some group decided that that was the best thing for the planet. That's an interesting take on the apocalypse as a population reduction exercise. And in related news, I read a scientific article about Antarctic ice cores that gives they give scientists a view into the climate over the last 800,000 years. And one of the things that they saw in the record was the impact of Europeans arriving in the Americas. The ice cores show a large drop in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and they think this is due to European diseases wiping out such a large percentage of the local population. 35 million fewer people, and forest regrowth means much less CO2 in the air. So the Earth abides. I also started watching some Doctor Who. I was never a Doctor Who geek. I just didn't really get it. And to me, it was sort of amateurish and silly British stuff. But because I'm running out of other things to watch, I'm giving it a second chance. And I started with the fourth Doctor, Tom Baker, because he's goofy enough and it's mildly entertaining. And well, my friends, I will move you to the exit. Let's not forget about those stories for me to edit up and read into audio over the break. Picture it, you'll be famous. Fast cars, expensive trips, adoring fans, high tea with the Duchess, hobnobbing with the beautiful people. And it all started with a simple story submission to After the Apocalypse. You can reach out to me directly at cyktrussell2s2ls@gmail.com or hit me up on the Facebook group. You can search for Old Man Apocalypse or After the Apocalypse. I think that either way will get you there. We've got 485 members now. But honestly, I think some of them are unwilling participants. I think they were stolen off the street and threatened with Vogon poetry until they came into the bunker and then we locked them in, wouldn't let them out. You can also use the contact form on my website, oldmanapocalypse.com. However, I get so many bots offering me web optimization and other silly stuff that if you fill one of those out, I may miss it. And thank you to the anonymous person who bought me a coffee over at Buy Me a Coffee. I appreciate the support. And that, my friends, gives us just over 500 words of valuable insight to make your day just a little bit better. And some of those words were the good words. They were the Glengarry words. Coffee is for closers. Keep the bunker doors latched and make sure the wolf dog is fed so that together we can keep surviving.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that.
Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.